Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 136, How Much is Too Much? Here we go. My host, I should say my guest, is the one, the only, the MVP of the Veeam Podcast. That's Jason Perlow. How you doing, Jason?
What's up, Rickatron? It's been a while, my friend.
Yeah.
You know, I see you, you know, every single time I just kind of pop in on Facebook and I see you when you pop up. Basically, it's always a map. And it's always an airplane traveling from one direction to another, or it's some, like, you know, awesome meal someplace in, like, Asia or something like that. You must be, like, what, like triple diamond platinum or something like, you know, like that on whatever airline you're on?
Yeah, so, yeah, Rickatron does get around. And if you do look, like, at my Facebook, it's, like, a flight to or from somewhere. But
and I'm like, oh, man, this poor bastard's on a, like, 20-hour flight. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, I was in India last week. Yeah, and then,
But also,
I've taken to cycling quite a bit, Perlow. And so those are maps you'll see as well. I did 731 miles in the month of July. I was very proud of myself, over 400.
I'm thinking about getting on back on my bike in the next 2 weeks.
Well, except I wiped out on 3rd of July, ripped one of my rotator cuff muscles, and I have to have surgery. So there you go.
Ouch.
Yeah, we'll be dealing with that for a while.
I don't like to go to the hospital.
No, and that's a good segue to what's going on here. So I guess what precipitated the podcast idea is, you know, I got to disclose to you, Perlow, I was in the office. I don't even know what day it was, but I walked down the hall. Every millennial is tuned into the Apple event streaming on their PC.
Yeah. Oh, I was paying attention.
And you would, but I don't give a flip. I really don't.
Right.
Okay. I mean, first of all, I'm an Android guy.
So was I.
But I do think Apple sets a lot of precedent on high-level capabilities, outstanding device hardware, user experience. They do a really good job of that. I cannot doubt it. I just prefer the Android side.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you have a personal story about how these devices may actually prove their value. Because I look at this stuff and I'm like, it's not just a phone you need anymore. You also need the watch.
Correct.
And your $700 solution is now what? I don't know, $1,500 solution.
Yeah.
So
at least.
Tell the listeners kind of what happened. Let's just say the value you got of the phone plus the watch.
Okay. So I was kind of on, I could say, an early adopter of the technology that was introduced in at the Apple event just recently that came into the new Apple Watch. So back in January, I kind of decided that I want, you know, really beginning this year, I decided, you know, I got to get myself one of these smartwatches, a band or something. I've been seeing all my friends playing with all these things and Apple Watches. And I'm like, all right, you know, I have to get into the wearables game. Because there are apps and there are things. And I mean, I was interested, all right?
You're always a gadget guy. You always want to try the new thing.
Exactly. So I got an Apple Watch, and I got a Samsung Watch, and I got an Android Watch. Couldn't want to play with all of them, and I bought a couple of, you know, used ones. I didn't buy them new. I just wanted them, you know, see how they were. And I wore the Apple Watch for about a week or so, you know, and then the Android one and the other one. They kind of thought they were about the same. You know, they all gave you the same notifications on the screens and everything, which is cool. It's cool to have that. But it's like, what is, like, sort of the real killer app for this thing, so to speak? So so 1 week, you know, I'm wearing an Apple Watch, and Apple gives me this email, and they say, we'd like you to opt into this study, the Apple Heart Study, because we're looking for all kinds of data and stuff, and we're going to analyze it and junk, and it's going to save people's lives. I'm like, well, that sounds pretty cool. So I installed that application. I didn't think anything about it. You know, I installed it on the iPhone to push whatever it needed to do to the watch to collect data, you know, all that fun cloud stuff. And 2 days later, I'm waking up in the morning, and I got my watch starts buzzing like crazy. And I'm looking at it, and it's a big heart symbol. It says, look at your heart symbol, your heart app on your iPhone. And I pop open the iPhone app, and then there's just this big orange and red message, the big black bold text that says, irregular heartbeat detected. That we were taking these samples over these, you know, 5 minute periods, and your heartbeat looks irregular. Click the button to talk to a doctor.
Whoa, talk to a doctor? I thought it was go see your doctor.
talk and video visit with a doctor.
Oh, wow.
So this is one of the physicians associated with Stanford Medicine. And actually, it's a company called American Well that does all these telemedicine type things. They're contractors, they're doctors, and they have this secure app that's specifically designed for video conferencing for wellness. I thought it was FaceTime, but I learned much later it was that. I click the button, and up pops a doctor. And they're like, well, you know, we found this. We're not entirely sure what it is. It's an irregular heartbeat, you know, that falls out of variance for, like, you know, what's normal. We'd like to send you this heart monitor. And, you're going to wear it on your chest for a week. You tape it there and, send it back to us after a week. I'm like,
Like a more precise measure? Is that kind of the goal of that? Because,
yeah.
You know, the wearables, I mean, come on. They bounce, they slide, I sweat.
Correct.
Okay.
And the best they can do is, you know, with that heartbeat sensor is really just get a heartbeat, right? You're not getting an electrophysiological type of readings.
No
from
blood pressure, just heartbeat. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Straight up heartbeat. And not like any of the really cool variances, you know, you would see in like an EKG, right? So this is kind of like, you know, where this is going. So I wear this thing, which is basically like an EKG, and it records my heart, you know, real electrical data for about, you know, like a week. Send it back to them. They send it back to me. And what turns out is, yeah, we looked at this, and, we had another phone call with them. And the guy's like, yeah, you've got a 28% AFib burden. You really need to go see your doctor. You've probably been doing this for years. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I go to see my cardiologist, you know, and I give him the printouts of the Apple Heart study data. He's like, yeah, this is 28% AFib burden. You know, maybe I'm going to send you in for an electrocardiogram. They actually did a sonogram of my heart, and they look for any physical defects and any, you know, anything like heart disease. And I didn't have any heart disease, but what they found out, that I had a slightly enlarged left atrium. The reason why that could have happened is because, you know, I used to be really heavy. I had high blood pressure and I had diabetes and all those things. And yeah, I lost 160 pounds, but over a period of time, you know, your heart, a muscle can enlarge, and that enlargement can cause the electrical, we can't really call them wires, but they're effectively transmitting electrical signals into your heart in order to cause that pacing. Each of those chambers, you know, have to be basically pump and synchronization, just like your car, you know, your car.
Like a cylinder, and, you know, like a cylinder in a car, like, you know, this cylinder was overworked.
Exactly. And you got a car, computer that's trying to synchronize those things. That's completely, the software's not acting correctly, right? So, they gave me a computer tomography scan to give much more detailed map of my heart to see what was going on. And I went to go see an electrical physiologist who ordered that test, and he said, yeah, well, you have two choices. One is you can take some medicine, and the medicine will allow you to – it helps like 50% of the people. And then the other alternative is to get a procedure called an ablation, where they go up with catheters through your veins. The veins just happen to be in your groin. And they knock you out, and they go up in there using the 3D map, Star Trek style, with a live X-ray merged with it in the OR, and they go in there, you know, without cutting you open. They go up with these, you know, with these probes, and they zap all these areas of your heart that they know that are faulty. And then basically what happens is, once those nerves resynchronize, you now have a fully functioning normal heart again.
Well, that's very similar to what they do, like in a heart attack situation, but a little bit more controlled. Sometimes they come up that way. So they're basically, Derek called it a cardiac tune-up is what they're doing.
Essentially, electrical tune-up.
Yeah.
It's like going to the tuner shop and then playing with your software.
Crazy how many parallels are being drawn to the mechanics we know, to devices we use every day, and the biology here. So this all started from this smartwatch, and then you're in this very serious medical situation. And, you know, you wrote part of this up in this your blog post, which is most interesting blog title I've ever seen, quote, "How the Apple Watch Saved My Life," which is basically what happened. And I know you've through the summer you've had a rough time. Jason and I were talking personally about what's been going on, but you're on the home stretch. You're heading back to work next week. Is that correct?
Yep.
Awesome.
That is correct. So, yeah, but the new Apple Watch will actually have that special heart monitor built into it. So, you know, they won't have to do a heart study on it. Your watch will automatically diagnose you have this condition, send you right to the doctor.
So you did this all on beta.
I was freaking totally beta, yeah.
And was there any cost for that, like, call the doctor bit? Did you have to pay for that?
No, that's just all Apple's dime.
Well, Apple's got the money for it, but hey, I mean, man.
They hired a whole team of doctors, you know, and paid for all this – you know, I know this out of insurance, you know, time.
Interesting. Well, you know, I kind of see I see a parallel. And maybe, Jason, you know if this is going to happen. But I the whole topic of this podcast came about because I thought the iPhone was kind of expensive.
Okay, it's very expensive.
Yeah. But when you think about some capabilities, right, like this, coupled with the watch, and then that puts it all in perspective. But one thing I thought about since then, and I'm curious to your thoughts of if this will happen or maybe even if you know, but I'm looking for an analogy here, like in auto insurance. Are you familiar with auto insurance?
Yep.
They put those like little satellite beacons that just monitor your driving behavior, you know, from low amounts of data. They can tell a lot about how you drive. Dare I say that the medical field would do something like this for wearables? Is that – do you think that's too far-fetched, a little bit too Star Trek?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I'm just curious because, you know, if you think about it, early detection of anything is one of the best ways to address any condition, right?
One of the follow-up articles I wrote about the possibility of there being health clouds, so these multi-tenant, you know, systems that are designed specifically to analyze health data and have apps that people can subscribe to using whatever wearables that they have, right? And these will be, you know, the early detection and ongoing monitoring services, right, to give you that extra layer of personal intelligence you have into your life. You know, and people will be able to see what the impact of eating crap all the time does to them. And the people who are eating healthy will see what the impact of eating healthy and exercising, you know, moderately or even frequently does for them. I mean, we're talking about real-time feedback into the way you live as opposed to living in a bubble.
And when, you know, as technologists, when we look at this, this is mobile device sprawl. This is big data. This is IoT. This is cloud analytics. This is HIPAA. You know, this is insurance, you know, regulated type stuff. Potentially, this is hitting on so many different areas. And dare I say, we're really at the dawn or the start of possibly a revolution of sorts in regards to personal devices, healthcare, Derek called employer disclosures, all kinds of things can really come up here.
There are Black Mirror scenarios as much as there are Star Trek scenarios.
Oh, deep, deep. I like that. Yeah. But, you know, aside from that, I mean, and Jason, I'm glad you came out on the informed and treatable side of that situation. Very glad for that. But, you know, when you look at the current inventory of devices, whether they're phones, smartwatches, wearables. I've seen some of the rings, but by the way, those are actually kind of interesting.
I got one coming this week.
There we go. And then, you know, tablets, you know, we've seen the Surface Go, kind of a new form factor come in. I drool over the Surface Book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but the thing is, this guy, Rickatron, he's cheap, right? I have 5 Surfaces in the house. Every single one of them were used or for sale at Ignite that were like $50, okay?
Yeah.
And I even have a broken one that I dropped and I still use it. That's how bad I am, right? And I just went and bought today at Costco for my daughter a new laptop that I was actually very happy with. But, of course, it's not the top-of-the-end laptop. But I just worry about the amount of devices that the average individual has and then the cost of that, the capabilities, you know, you've sold me on that there, but what's your perspective on the quality of devices that we have, everything from tablets and phones?
I think that we are approaching a situation that is entirely similar to the way that the auto industry works in the stratification of customers. You have people that buy Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and Teslas. You have people that buy Lexuses and Infinities. You have people that buy BMWs and Mercedes. and you have your Chevys and your Toyotas and your Hyundais and things like that, okay? And then you have, you know, the used markets for all these types of things, right? So, you know, it's whoever, you know, if you have means, you're going to spend it on more expensive stuff, usually, right? Unless you're like a really odd person, right? I, you know, so what I would say is that, just as you see with the auto industry, the rich people getting all the benefits first, right? And they pay to the nose for those things, right? Eventually, this technology trickles down to the lower end. Things
kind of like air conditioning, you know, was high
end. Air conditioning, yeah. All those things eventually only were in the most expensive Cadillacs, right, or whatever, and eventually ended up in the, you know, the common man's vehicle. Things like anti-lock braking systems, electronic fuel injections, a lot of these things, automatic transmissions, were only existed in high-end cars at one point, and eventually it got into everything. So I think that this is exactly what Apple has now become, right? So you have these phones that cost $800, $1,000, $1,400, $1,600 in the case of the one that I ended up buying. That's what the lease financing ended up look like over a 2-year period through Apple's program. I'm on the upgrade program every year, so basically I just get the same lease payment just over and over and over and over again through the same phone.
And a new phone. You stay with a device less than a year old.
Right.
So that's
so. Yeah. So you know, it's I write about this stuff, so it's a cost of doing business. But the thing is that, you know, not everybody's going to go for these super expensive devices. Because if you look at all the other things coming out of China, right, you have, you know, perfectly nice, perfectly good Android phones for $250, $300, $400, $500. You get a really super nice phone. You know, you can get like a OnePlus 6. You know, which is when I'm holding one of those things right now, which has got the fastest Qualcomm processor, plenty of RAM, plenty of storage. It is a Lexus of a phone, okay? It's just not a BMW M3 of a phone, okay? But if you look at them in terms of raw capability, I mean, your average applications that run on these things has not really been able to take care advantage of hardware from 2 years ago, right? So, again, it's all about, do I want the better screen? Do I want the better camera? Do I want the better materials? Do I – those are – you know, and Apple's ecosystem also is unique. Mm-hmm. Apple has the money to spend on new innovations before anybody else does, and those new innovations cost a lot of money in their devices, right? So this whole face identification thing with the laser projector on your face, and I don't know how many cameras it was. Is there an infrared camera plus an optical camera that it uses in order to detect your face, and it looks at your eyeballs to see if it's looking at the screen, all kinds of things that it does to do biometrics on your face is a rather expensive proposition.
But there's a huge R&D investment to get to that capability.
Yeah.
It's not going to kill your battery and be a device as big as a refrigerator. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and if you look at the Android devices, their face recognition is basically optical. They don't have all those crazy things. It's nowhere near as fast. It's nowhere near as consistently accurate. But, you know, within a few years, they'll get there. And the reason why they'll get there is that there are components manufacturers that, you know, are out there in the wild that, you know, are trying to copy all these things, right? So Apple has proprietary designs for their stuff, but these same manufacturers are working with other companies. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just the way the supply chain works. Now, there's agreements and what have you, and certain companies will run and certain will work with ours. But basically, the secrets don't stay secret in this industry very long.
Yeah, and I do think we'll probably see when you compare
China's concerned. I mean, like, you know,
yeah,
come on, you know.
Yeah, so. Right. I do think, you know, when we compare like the auto industry or, you know, there's a couple other things, but I think there'll be kind of a more rapid kind of democracy of these capabilities across ecosystems. And I also think that probably sooner rather than later, you know, it's going to be at a point where a primitive capability, like let's just take a primitive capability, sending and receiving a phone call. All these devices can do it on the phone side. And then if you take a more advanced capability like heart monitoring through a wearable, I think you'll see a primitive capability that, again, can just be a trigger. And regardless if it's the highest end, you know, best sensors or not, I think that the learning, machine learning, big data, whatever we want to call
it. Oh, that thing. Yeah, that's really the whole value to this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that I think Apple really needs is a partner in the cloud, because, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to run a heart study for 10,000, 100,000 patients. Now that you start selling millions of these watches, Apple's got some nice data center territory, but are they really a cloud analytics type provider that would be allowing a developer to come in and put up a cloud with extended services for these things?
Well, especially when you're talking about a slice of the human population, right? The scale becomes a different conversation.
Yeah, when you get into tens of millions, it's a completely different.
Well, thing. I mean, I'm even playing it forward, Jason. I'm thinking, can we make like a wearable like this for chickens and cows and pigs to, you know, work out the from an agriculture standpoint? Oh, this one's ready. You know, or this is why this one is not producing enough milk or something like that. You know, I mean, again, and there's more of those than there are humans on Earth. So this could be interesting. Could be interesting. So, wow. I mean, Perlo, I always enjoy talking with you. And guys, I'm going to have a link in the podcast notes to a number of these different articles that Perlo is kind of trialed out and such. But when it comes to devices, Perlo, you know, you play with everything. And that's one thing I really value about that. And, you know, like you said, you recently switched kind of over to the Apple side of things. And I totally understand why. But, you know, kind of a wrap up closing thought. You know, what are you liking most, I guess, on the phone and on the tablet side? We'll just kind of close with that. What are you seeing right now that you like?
Well, I just got rid of my current generation iPad. I sold it last month with the thought that they would come out with a new one this month, but it looks like it'll probably be October or November, and I'm looking forward to the iPhone XS, basically, version of the next iPad. Would be nice because I have to have a tablet. But I really, you know, to be perfectly frank, I'm really looking forward to what Microsoft is coming up with the next Surface. It sounds like that, you know, they've made some really cool changes. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be happening in October. You know, I like Google's phones. But I really like what's coming out of China in terms of these companies that were not exactly giving the most easy time of having carrier relationships, like Huawei, you know, Xiaomi, some of these others. They're making tremendous value phones for the money. Like I said, you can buy these rocket ship type Chinese phones for like $300, and you know they're absolutely incredibly capable with, you know, with top end parts. You know, on the Qualcomm side and on the memory side and then on the screen technology side. It just doesn't have an Apple logo on it. So, like I said, there's so much happening in that space, right? Especially when you're on the Android side of things. I just want to see what happens next as far as who is going to be the best cloud provider for interfacing with these devices. Is it going to be Google? Is it going to be AWS? I don't think so. Or is it going to be Microsoft?
Because I agree, the cloud is going to be part of the overall value of the device going forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, I say use what you want, but we need to start thinking about who's going to start running our data. You know, who do we choose? Whose apps do we choose to collect this data on us? And what do we do with it? And how do we analyze it? How do we share it with our health providers? You know, that's going to be a really big thing. It's going to be bigger than social networking, in my opinion.
Oh, I'm convinced because it's I'm looking for the right word. It's permanent and stateless, meaning it's not something you turn on or off. It's always there. So
yep.
It's outstanding. So, Perlo, thanks again. And everyone, if you are not following this cat on Twitter, please do so, at Jay Perlo. He's also the author of the Tech Broiler blog at ZDNet. And, you know, just an all-around awesome dude, foodie, you name it, he's got an opinion. Perlo, thanks again for being on the podcast.
No problem, dude.